For the most part, they carried themselves with poise, a kind of dignity. Now and then, however, there were times of panic, when they squealed or wanted to squeal but couldn't, when they twitched and made moaning sounds and covered their heads and said, "Dear Jesus," and flopped around on the earth and fired their weapons blindly and cringed and sobbed and begged for the noise to stop and went wild and made stupid promises to themselves and to God and to their mothers and fathers, hoping not to die. In different ways, it happened to all of them. Afterward, when the firing ended, they would blink and peek up. They would touch their bodies, feeling shame, then quickly hiding it. They would force themselves to stand. As if in slow motion, frame by frame, the world would take on the old logic. Absolute silence, then the wind, then sunlight, then voices. It was the burden of being alive. Awkwardly, the men would reassemble themselves, first in private, then in groups, becoming soldiers again. They'd repair the leaks in their eyes. They'd check for casualties, call in dust-offs, light cigarettes, try to smile, clear their throats and spit, and begin cleaning their weapons. After a time, someone would shake his head and say, "No lie, I almost shit my pants." And someone else would laugh, which meant it was bad, yes. But the guy had obviously not shit his pants. It wasn't that bad. And in any case, nobody would ever do such a thing and then go ahead and talk about it. They would squint into the dense, oppressive sunlight. For a few moments, perhaps, they'd fall silent, lighting a joint and tracking its passage from man to man, inhaling, holding in the humiliation. "Scary stuff," one of them might say. But then someone else would grin or flick his eyebrows and say, "Roger Dodger almost cut me a new asshole. Almost." There were numerous such poses. Some carried themselves with a sort of wistful resignation, others with pride or stiff soldierly discipline or good humor or macho zeal. They were afraid of dying, but they were even more afraid to show it. They found jokes to tell. They used a hard vocabulary to contain the terrible softness. "Greased," they'd say, "offed, lit up, zapped while zipping." It wasn't cruelty, just stage presence. They were actors. When someone died, it wasn't quite dying, because in a curious way it seemed scripted, and because they had their lines mostly memorized, irony mixed with tragedy, and because they called it by other names, as if to insist and destroy the reality of death itself. They kicked corpses, they cut off thumbs, they talked grunt lingo. They told stories about Ted Lavender's supply of tranquilizers, how the poor guy didn't feel a thing, how incredibly tranquil he was. "There's a moral here," said Mitchell Sanders. They were waiting for Lavender's chopper, smoking the dead man's dope. "The moral's pretty obvious," Sanders said and winked. "Stay away from drugs. No joke. They'll ruin your day every time." "Cute," said Henry Dobbins. "Mind blower, get it? Talk about Wiggy. Nothing left, just blood and brains." They made themselves laugh. "There it is," they'd say. Over and over, "There it is, my friend, there it is," as if the repetition itself were an act of poise, a balance between crazy and almost crazy, knowing without going, "There it is," which meant be cool, let it ride, because, oh yeah, man, you can't change what can't be changed. There it is, there it absolutely and positively and fucking well is.